Welcome to East Meets West, episode 158. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
You sure are. We're doing it by Skype again because it's too darn hot to move.
Yes. Rather, we're all really lazy today.
Yeah. It's warm out here in the summertime California heat. We haven't done a show in a couple weeks because we've been traveling so much, or at least I've been traveling so much.
You've been traveling. I've been traveling nowhere.
You've been going nowhere, buddy.
Yes, that is so true.
I went on vacation, which, you know, just whatever. It's cool. So I was gone for a couple weeks. Not the interesting stories I have from Malta and London, but I did get to meet a bunch of listeners to various shows in my travels.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so and actually people who do shows. So I got to especially to meet Hawaii, who does, that's his name on Twitter. His name's actually Ryan. He does a Lost podcast called The Transmission.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Got to meet a bunch of other podcasters as well. So shout out to the Hawaii folks.
Sweet.
Some Sword and Laser, some East Meets West, some Buzz Out Loud, some Techzilla.
Some Techzilla?
Yeah, there's people who said they watch Techzilla.
Oh, cool.
Big fans. Big fans of it all. The good. Roger Chang Empire.
Empire. I wish I had an empire. It's more like a corner market.
So I saw today that luxury goods searches on Google are up. I think that's a positive sign for the economy, right?
No, I think people are like me. They're looking for bargains. Like, hey, I've always wanted this. I wonder if it's dropped in price.
I wonder if that Lexus is cheap now.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, there's a lot of nice-to-have items that I think, you know, people are looking
Lexus
for.
Is the must-have for you, I know.
For some people, you never know. I can only have real leather underneath my tush when I drive. But seriously, I mean, like, there's a lot of...
That's why you ride a cow.
High-end, you know, goods that I think people are hoping to snag a good deal on because they're expecting retailers to be in that kind of bind and maybe trying to sell off things at a cheaper rate or cheaper cost.
Yeah. No, you're probably right. Although, you have to have some spending money to even look for bargains. So, at least
it's true.
We're not that bad. Because for a while there, nobody's buying anything.
Yeah, I think part of it is it's not as apparent for, you know, you don't have these huge soup lines like all the pundits were like, you know, news anchors,
yeah,
on CNN and Fox and, you know, MSNBC.
Pulling out the old black and white footage from the 30s.
Yeah, you know, you don't have a dust bowl, so you don't really get that same like, oh my, you know.
That's really what we don't have. That's what we're missing this time around. No dust bowl.
No dust bowl and no, you know, people living out of their cars. And there are people living out of their cars, but like, you know, where you just have a tenement or a camp.
Hoovervilles, I believe.
Yes.
They were often called. We don't have any Obamavilles.
Well, not yet. We'll see till the end. Well, that remains to be seen.
Yes. Well, as you say, not yet.
So maybe people are just crossing their fingers, hoping for the best. And
I don't mean to curse anything, but I feel like we're in the bottom, and if not on the other side of the bottom a little bit.
I think we still have, and I think you're correct that we're at the bottom, but how long at the bottom we are is still yet to be determined.
I kind of feel like we're towards the other end of the bottom, like we're at least looking up, even if we're not moving up.
I honestly feel things won't pick up till next year.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's gonna be a little while longer. I thought it was gonna be by the end of this year, but I think it might be. I don't know. We might start to see some simmerings this holiday season. That seems to be always Christmas time. So when everybody, you know, gets forced into spending a lot of money, so that might cause everybody who's been conservative and saving and worried. The ones who didn't really need to be worried, although they didn't know that at the time, might open up the pocketbooks finally at the end of the year.
I know. I mean, everyone's, you know, holding out. I mean, across the world for like a consumer-led recovery. Yeah, you have government stimulus packages to encourage spending, but you know, the ultimate question is, who will these buyers be? Will it be the U.S., where Americans are ready and like, you know, a record amount of debt, or is it going to be a combination of Eurozone and, you know, up and coming Asian, the middle class, you know, is it Latin America? Because someone has to buy the stuff. This before all the stuff was, you know, when you finally went down to the final buyer, it was an American or North American or a Briton or an Australian.
Keep going. Or a Chinese person or a Japanese
person.
But no,
but I mean, like, you know, Japan's economy is export-based. Yeah. China's economy is export-based.
Right.
You know, Europe, with the exception of Britain's economy, is export-based. Someone needs to be buying it for you to export it.
Well, I mean, when you say export-based, you just mean the exports outweigh imports?
That means that's their chief. Yeah, that's their chief.
But that's what GDP. That's what everybody wants. Everybody wants to have more exports than imports.
But the key is, like, you need someone at the other end to buy.
What you need is balance. You need as many importers as exporters.
Well, you need domestic consumption.
Yeah.
You need a percentage of your population to actually buy the goods. Because if you don't, then you're always at the mercy of the markets. You're always at the mercy of, you know, okay, that country doesn't want to buy it anymore. You know, okay, then 50% of our exports are now suddenly cut off because our primary buyer can no longer afford to buy it. I mean, you see that in Eastern Europe where, you know, had a lot of these, post-communist economies, you know, doing, you know, like manufacturing automobiles, electronics. If you know what we're to sell it to, no one to sell it to, I mean, it's just going to sit and you can't pay people.
And it's not just about the real economy, though. I mean, because I think what happened, I mean, you're totally right. Everything you said is true. But what happened with the economy is you had these non-consumer related issues that started it all off. Bank related transactions, these speculations and real estate investments that caused the economy to start to slide, and then you saw the consumers start to stop spending, and that exacerbated it. So yeah, that doesn't negate anything you said.
But I guess what
it's getting to is, as the consumers come back and they start spending money wherever it is, let's leave the nations out of it for the moment, and that money starts pumping back into the economy, and the banking industry, which is actually recovering somewhat at this point, starts to lend money more easily, and you start, are we going to learn anything? Or are we going to go right back to doing all of the same risky behaviors that we did before?
You know, it's hard to say. I honestly think it's going to happen again. I mean, I think you brought up a really good point about the real economy versus the kind of hyped speculator economy.
I kind of hate to call it the real economy because it's all economy. It's all real.
Well,
real goods and not so much services.
But I mean, like, the thing is, a lot of that prosperity, a lot of that growth came out of people speculating, people hedging their bets, people saying, hey, I'm going to make $1 million tomorrow. Why, you know, so I can afford to buy that new luxury car. I can afford to buy another home. You know, you had this money people were spending they didn't have yet. So it kind of inflated, and that's what, you know, that's the bubble, is people were spending money that they had yet to collect or they assumed
they were counting on. Yeah,
exactly. So, you know, it's one of those things. Do we expect a smaller economy that's, you know, generally consistent and very stable, or do you kind of want a much bigger economy at the risk of having kind of this elasticity in it where it's just going to start snapping back because people get, you know, the economy gets overheated because people, oh, that's such a good deal, you know, real estate, I'm going to buy more real estate,
estate. That's the thing. I'll guarantee you this. If there is another bubble, it won't be in tech stocks and it won't be in real estate. Because even though we don't really learn, we learn on this small level of like, oh, that's where we got burned last time. Well, I'm certainly not going to get all caught up in a real estate bubble.
I think
I'll get caught up
in
this other bubble. Because that's what happened with real estate. I remember saying to people who were telling me to my face, oh, real estate can never go down. I'm like, that's what they said about tech stocks 5 years ago.
Well, the thing historically,
it's like,
real estate
not
has
pay
gone
attention?
Down.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it hasn't gone down in 30 years. Okay.
Does it mean it's time for it to get snapped?
It's due? But, yeah. So, I mean, it's just silly. It's like, that's what they said about tech stocks. Tech stocks will never go down. And boom, they went down in a big way. Real estate will never go down. Well, guess what? Houses are worth less now than they were 2 years ago. So
believe me, I know.
Wait, the best way to find out about the next bubble is wait till you hear people start saying X will never go down. Buy a lot of it right then. Wait a month. Sell it all. And then sit back and laugh.
I bet you it's going to be in commodities, but like...
You think? What kind of... commodities pretty big, though. You think a particular area, or...?
I'm thinking like gold and precious metals. I don't know.
Interesting, because there's a lot of talk about that being the safe place. I mean, I've even gone and purchased some exchange-trade funds of gold just as a little bit of a hedge, because it's like, oh, well, gold is very solid and stable. And yeah, it is getting a lot of buzz. You're right.
So, I mean, it's people just jump. People with money or people who are looking to turn something around are going to jump on what they see as the next big thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's probably going to have the same effect. You know, people are going to, oh, I better buy a lot of it now before it goes up even more. And then you just have the superheated, you know, where it's no longer based on the actual commodity price. It's just based on speculation and inflated speculation. Kind of like the collectibles. You know, you collect baseball
cards. Oh, right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, oh, this rookie card's going to net me like $10,000.
Yeah, I saved all my Ricky Henderson cards thinking I was going to retire, when, you know, back in the 80s. Yeah, I think they're worth like, you know, it's all relative, right? Like, as a kid, I think you don't really have a fair concept of the percentage growth. Because, frankly, those Henderson cards I have probably have realized a 300% growth, but that's from 2 cents to a couple dollars, you know?
Yeah, no, it's I don't know. It's just people are crazy, because when they think they can make out like a bandit, and that's why people gamble, people play the lottery. If they think they can score big, you know, all the next one's just around the corner. It's just around the corner. And I think it's just a kind of that kind of gambling side of humanity.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I do think we'll learn some regulatory lessons, at least for a while. We learned a lot during the Great Depression in the 30s, and that helped us nail down the economy and mitigate these sorts of booms and busts over the years. And then, as we've talked about before, we started in the late 90s loosening the nuts a little bit, yeah, loosening things up, and we kind of felt the pain of that this past year. So I think we may have learned, at least in the short term, not to loosen up all of that stuff. And what I'm very pleased at is it doesn't seem, and I'm not 100% caught up on everything that's going on, but it doesn't seem like we've over-regulated in reaction either.
No, it's one of those things, I think, where Obama's administration were, they were very kind of like, let's not like throw the baby out with the bathwater. Let's just kind of start, you know, you have a big rubble. You just want to start picking up pieces slowly, one by one, instead of just taking in a huge, you know, crane and just moving everything in mass.
Go slow.
Yes.
Go urgently slow.
Carefully.
Yeah,
I guess.
That's a better word. It's so the economy is starting to wear off, because as I see on all of the 24-hour news channels, they're all talking about Republicans and Democrats hating each other again.
Surprise.
Which is just super boring. There's an interesting article in The Economist today pointing out that the California government is getting close to, not the government necessarily, but a couple of interest groups are getting close to succeeding and calling for a constitutional convention, because the current system has really forced the most extreme members of the Democrats and the Republicans into the Congress. And for several years running now, they can't agree on a budget.
No, and it's a great article, and it kind of lays bare kind of the issues with California's current system and the reason why it's deadlocked. And of course, you know, the traditional ills, or at least American political ills, of gerrymandering and special interest. It's just, you know, it's just all these things that sound good, but once you start kind of nailing it on just one by one without kind of looking at the entire structure of it, it just, you start running into these things where they keep running into each other.
The gerrymandering is my big pet peeve. You know how I went off on the Electoral College last year? I think gerrymandering should be
Electoral College
against the law. How can you? To me, it's like faking votes. It's like voter fraud. I mean, how do you allow parties to decide, okay, I'm going to carve up the districts for my own good without paying attention to balance or population?
I still think you just get rid of political parties.
I agree. I mean, unfortunately, you can't do that right now. Forget political will. Even if the president decided today, okay, political parties are against the law, it would be chaos. I mean, the whole system is so built on it. It's going to take a long time to dismantle it properly. I'm not sure that the political will is there to do it anyway. But one of the things California wants to do that's cool is the open primary.
Yes, I think that would be awesome.
You get to vote for Democrats or Republicans no matter how you're registered. And then the top two vote getters go in a runoff in the general election, even if they're both from the same party.
Yeah, totally. Perfect sense. I think they did another California article recently, I think in last month's issue. And I think it goes to the heart of the matter in that California is actually a very kind of there's this weird dichotomy that people who aren't from California or who don't live in California don't understand is California, the middle section that borders Nevada and that interior area is actually very conservative.
Yeah, and parts of it, like the Central Valley, are sort of Orange County Republican conservative. Parts of it are just sort of that Midwestern sensible conservative. Or not even Midwestern so much as that Rocky Mountain Western conservative, where it's like, just kind of leave me alone sort of conservative.
The libertarian kind of...
They wouldn't even call themselves libertarian because they just don't want to get caught up in it, I think. They're just like, you know what? You take care of your side of the fence, I'll take care of mine. You know, we'll pay our taxes, they'll pave the roads, I'm done with it. I don't want to mess with this all the time. And that's the opposite of what you get in, say, Berkeley or Santa Monica. It's very liberal and very active and very like, let's fight for the power of the people. And that's the public perception of California right there. And it's true in those areas for sure.
This article also goes in and like, where you have essentially because of gerrymandering and because of the way, communities are built, you essentially have kind of these small enclaves of, either extreme left, extreme right, or even middle left, middle right, or, but you just sit around with like-minded neighbors.
Yeah, you look at the governor. He is very moderate, even though he is a Republican and a former action hero. He's very moderate on the conservative side. That's what you get when the whole state votes. But
yeah,
then when you have the gerrymandering, all of a sudden you get very extreme people.
I think it's unfair to everyone else because everyone else is essentially held hostage to these kind of extreme poles of thought, either governance or the way the economy should be run. So it's very it's kind of schizophrenic in a way.
It may not be as extreme as California, but I think the entire country suffers from that as well. I think one of the reasons we're seeing this constant, there's a 50-50 split and we've got red states and blue states and all of this stuff, is that we have gerrymandered things up in every state for the congressional districts as well. And so, you have these long reptilian districts.
Reptilian?
Yeah. That's what it looks like. They look like they just, they're creating these like four-toed sloths or something. They're not in any kind of logical way drawn out except to favor whatever party's in charge.
Well, and it's funny because, there was one argument for because I guess the number of African-Americans living within this, I forgot which state it was, they weren't clustered close enough to each other to have any kind of a vote. So they kind of redrew it in this weird shape so that, all the majority African-American communities would be one district.
Yeah, I honestly do like the idea behind that of saying like, let's take people who don't have a voice and try to get them a voice in government. I'm okay with that principle. Doing it that way is just wrong. It's just baloney. It's doesn't help. It just creates more problems. You want to do something like ranked choice voting or representational or proportional systems if you want to overcome those problems. Not this weird districting thing. I think districting should be done by a judicial review. I don't know, California had this idea of having three Republicans, three Democrats. Kind of hate that because it brings parties into it.
Yeah.
But some sort of impartial board that bases it purely on population, dividing it up so that the population is equal in every district and it's around population centers. And then you can review it to make sure that you're not doing anything stupid. Like, okay, well, because we blindly followed the geography and population, we left, you know, we split this group in half and they should really be in, you know, there are legitimate arguments for that, but
yeah,
but in a very limited way.
California in many ways is just kind of a microcosm of the entire country because of its size and because of its economy. But I mean, also, 37 million people in this state. You know, when I was growing up back in the 80s, it was only 28.
Well, talk about that. Really, honestly, I'm not advocating this because of all of the other problems it would bring up, but the states are a problem as well because it's not very equal. You've got a state of 37 million. You got states like Texas, and then you get a state like Rhode Island, and, you know, that's kind of messed up too.
Yeah, and ultimately, it's all kind of from the perspective of the individual, right? You know, some have argued perhaps California should be broken up into smaller states.
What is that state called? It's up north. They've got a shadow government that they've created up in the woods.
Northern.
It's named after a person, is the thing.
Barbaraville?
Oh. No. It's not even necessarily liberal, I don't think. I think it's libertarian. But it's like, I don't think it's the Redwood State, but they've got some name for their state, and they've got a capital and everything.
There always used to be something. I mean, at one point, they wanted to split the state in half, so there would be a Northern California, Southern California, because of water rights issues and water usage.
Right.
It always comes up when people start feeling like, you know, they're not getting their fair share.
Before we wrap up here, let's give our thoughts on Star Trek.
I love the movie.
I was going to say, you who are hard on movies.
Yes. My only complaint really is I think they were too deferential to the original Enterprise design.
Do you really? Okay. You're the first person I've heard say that. Most people have loved that. And a few people I've talked to who aren't familiar with the original series didn't feel like they were left out. They didn't really notice the homages, even though there's tons of them.
It's not so much as an homage. I just never really liked the original Enterprise shape. I just thought it was kind of, especially when they do the kind of where the starship's kind of rolling and through the debris, it just looks very awkward.
But at a certain point, if you change the shape of the ship, and if you change the characters a lot, and if you blow up planets, all of a sudden you don't have the original. Why call it Star Trek anymore? It's something totally different.
I understand what you're getting at, but they gave a name change to the Next Generation by calling it the Next Generation. I understand those are supposed to be different, entirely different series and stuff. But this is a reimagining and this is a reboot. This is kind of
how much of a shape change are you talking about?
So it doesn't look. To me, it still looks. I like the interior design, and I like the uniforms, but the ship just for some reason just feels really tacky. It just looks really tacky.
You're not saying you have a problem with the idea of a saucer and nacelles.
No.
You just thought it looked a little too old fashioned.
Yeah, I thought the Kelvin, the ship that's, in the beginning of the movie, spoilers. I thought that looked more like a starship than the Enterprise. The Enterprise just looked like a really nice, model that someone made for Star Trek convention. It just felt too pretty, too embellished.
Thought Zachary Quinto did a fantastic job as Spock.
Who's the guy who did McCoy?
Because I can't remember the guy's name, but he nailed DeForest Kelly.
It was kind of surreal in a way. What do you call it when you summon? Summon a spirit. He was
like
kind of like
Ola, or he was channeling.
Yeah, channeling. It was like he was channeling DeForest Kelly from Beyond the Grave.
I thought Kirk character wasn't very much like Kirk until the very end. And it kind of made sense how we got there.
Yeah, and actually I appreciated that. I think I liked that more.
Well, and here's the big thing. Now, this is tiny bit of a spoiler, so if you haven't seen the show, stop it now, unless you don't care. The alternate reality portion of the whole thing just fixed a lot of my objections, frankly, so that it's like, oh, okay, that's alternate realities are a longtime staple in Star Trek. So now I'm fine with them, you know, blowing up the planets and all of that, you know, and Kirk being a rebel because his dad died, all that sort of thing. But I still can't get past the idea of Vulcan being gone.
Yes, I thought that was kind of...
a little extreme.
That, and I don't remember Vulcan having that many people. 6 billion people.
It always felt very sparse, yeah.
Because every time you see it, there's like 3 people in a lot of wasteland.
Yeah.
So it's like... really? 6 billion people? Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I just feel like Earth and Vulcan are the pillars of the Federation. And even if you're rebooting it, if you want to keep it close, then really, do you blow it up? I don't know about that.
You know, they could have had maybe a disaster that caused, you know, a significant portion of the population to grow ill or
yeah, and then
or
they would be able to bounce back and still have their home or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
But it just seems, you know, now it's a scarred Vulcan, you know, with a big hole or scar on the side of the planet.
But no, it's gone.
Yeah, and it's just kind of weird.
I think Jade, there's 2 more movies. The actors are contracted to do 2 more movies, so maybe they'll be exploring that more in the next couple movies. Who knows?
One thing I really appreciate is the fact that the phasers on the Enterprise aren't these just really slow weapons. They're these really rapid-fire machine gunny effects.
Oh, yeah.
You know
what
I mean? It feels like there's something happening instead of, like, you constantly complaining. So you're in this huge warship, and all you can do is fire 2 beams of energy. Yeah, yeah, it's just like... So I felt that... I like that aspect of it. I like the action sequence. It was very... it was actually very William Shatner-esque. Because if people who know the Star Trek TV lore, you know, the original pilot that was... you know, recut into the Menagerie episodes of the original Star Trek series. You know, the studio didn't originally go with that one because they felt that it wasn't action-oriented enough. It was too methodical, maybe too cerebral, too much
talk. They
didn't
like Majel Barrett being the first officer either. They didn't believe it.
So, you know, they got William Shatner on, and then you had kind of the swashbuckling, you know, Errol Flynn-type character who would do flying kicks and, you know, be overly dramatic, you know, in pain and kind of exuding emotion, you know, over everything. So it kind of had that feel. It's like, ooh, things are moving. It's not like, you know, they're sitting at some table debating, you know, ad nauseum about something that no one could care about.
Yeah,
which is kind of the thing that kind of irritated about me about Next Generation. I'm sure you disagree, is that they just spend so much time deliberating and discussing and these morality, you know, it's like, okay.
I could use more, yeah. I think sometimes they acted hastily. You're right. I'm just kidding. yeah, it got a little heavy-handed. I did like the fact that Next Generation lived up to a challenge of let's not go with the easy plots. I mean, Roddenberry basically said you can't have conflict between humans. It drove people crazy, but it led them to come up with some really amazing creative stories. Not every time, of course, but
yeah.
I mean, that is what pushed them to that. So
I think there, you know, I agree. I think there were some very good episodes of the Next Generation. Unfortunately, I didn't think that all the episodes were as interesting. I mean, the best one I like still is where Picard is kind of zapped by that alien probe and he relives the life of that scientist.
Yeah, and he starts playing the flute or whatever.
Yes, and I thought that was a brilliant episode. I thought that was well done, well told. And then you just get weird ones where, you know, you have the tar-like creature or the... what was that? The planet where Wesley Crusher, what's his name? Will Wheaton, you know, crashes into the little flower bed and he's sentenced to death.
Yeah.
And it just seemed kind of, huh? So, you know...
All right,
but,
folks.
I did Deep Space Nine much better.
Welcome back. We should be on a more regular schedule now for at least a bit.
Yes, we've been taking our Metamucil.
Yeah, exactly. So look for East Meets West in a podcatcher near you. And, of course, comment subreddit.com/EMW. You can follow Roger on Twitter. That seems to be the thing people do on podcasts these days. Follow Roger on Twitter at twitter.com/JollyRoger.
Yes.
And follow me at twitter.com/AceDetect, A-C-E-D-T-E-C-T.
Nice.
See you later, folks.
Bye.